Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. We are back to our regularly scheduled programming, still doing the Monday NBA show with Michael Gallagher and Drew Dinkmeyer. This episode, though, we are back joined by Pat Mayo to have a conversation on the state of American media. And I know that sounds very boring, but I promise you that Pat and I talking about podcasts and should you pay for podcasts, what are the future of podcasts, the Deadspin thing, and really just, I mean, you guys know what happens when Pat comes on the show. We go on 19 different tangents. We have, fantastic conversations about all of the stuff that is coming up to us as we make our way through this space. You know, of course, we talk about gambling, about golf, all of the things that Pat and I hold near and dear. I think this was a great episode of the show. Very happy to have finally got it out to you guys. You guys probably noticed we'll say a few things. We recorded this about 3 weeks ago, so it's going to sound a little bit different than the shows that Pat and I normally do. Of course, if you like the show, you can leave a rating and review on iTunes. You can support the show on Patreon and get bonus episodes of the show, patreon.com/takecast. And also, you can go to our sponsor website, rotoexperts.com, and sign up for the NFL 365 package and get 10% off of that using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K. And now let's get into the episode. All right, everyone, welcoming back in our buddy, now the easily the most recurring guest. It's either you or Drew Dinkmeyer, but of course, Pat Mayo, welcome to the show. Of course, thank you very much for coming on. Thank you for sharing the time. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. I mean, it's not fair to say that Drew is more reoccurring than me. I mean, you work with Drew. You don't work with me.
It's true. I have you on the show because you're my friend. I have Dink on the show because he's my boss.
Yes, you are contractually obligated to have Dink on the show.
Right, exactly. So right before we went live, I told you that I have a topic that was really good for us because I think we're both going to have differing sides of this conversation. And it was the Deadspin media controversy, but not just like, oh, should you be able to talk about politics in your work? Going a little bit deeper than that, I was kind of talking with some of the Daily Roto subscribers yesterday. And I've always kind of maintained the argument that what you and I do, what writers do, what podcast producers do, what TV producers do, it's not, this is not backbreaking labor, right? This isn't like digging ditches.
How
but as the 21st century progresses and more people have more free time, more people want more distractions, more people want more content, entertainment jobs actually do, you know, quote unquote, deserve the money that they get paid. True or false?
True.
Okay, then never mind. I thought that you would be able to take the devil's advocate. Not even be able to. I thought that you would kind of take the devil's advocate position that these jobs are actually not that these jobs are overpaid.
No, I actually think it kind of works the other way. We're starting to see the market actually catch up to a lot of this stuff where you don't see, and like if we take this, whether it's like political journalism, whether it's sports journalism, sports entertainment, video, that kind of thing, it used to be the guys at the very top got paid all the money in the world, right? So like Stephen A. Smith, I think his new contract is like $10 million a year. He's probably still underpaid for the value that he brings to ESPN.
Oh, that he brings to ESPN? Yeah, not even close. That's for sure true.
So we live in a situation now where it used to be like guys got paid $12 million to be on TV, or, you know, Nick Faldo gets paid $6 million to commentate on golf. I have no idea if that number is accurate or not. But the me's and you's of the world were working for free on the internet.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Grinded for free for a long time, or grinded for very little compensation per piece of output for a long time.
Exactly. And there's still a ton of people that are doing that. And even when I first started doing this, I mean, I think I worked for free for like 4 years just to continue getting reps, getting everything. And I didn't even know what the upside was going to be of it. Because at the time, like, unless you worked for Yahoo, unless you worked for ESPN, in like these major publications. And even those guys weren't getting paid a ton of money. They were getting paid under market value for, as it turned out, what was the driving force for a lot of these sites. And, you know, thank God for companies like DraftKings who came in and invested all this money into the market, that, you know, you have your startup DFS subscription sites like a Daily Roto, like, you know, Guru Elite, like Establish the Run, all these different places. They're now viable entities because people will pay for their content. When people start paying for content, they can actually afford to pay the people and compensate them in a way that is fair. And I mean, a lot of people are still severely underpaid, but there actually is a middle ground now where it's not all or nothing. People can fall into the middle.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. So the pushback I get, of course, is just that, like, it's just people saying, like, you know, anyone can do it. And people do think that. People do believe that anyone can do the job of someone in sports media. And you're right, they can.
Yeah, but they just can't do it well.
Yeah, I guess that is the difference, right? Is that to be good at writing, to be good at podcasting, to be able to, like, you know, like, I produce all these podcasts myself. I do the audio editing myself. I do, like, all the SEO stuff myself. And you did that for a long time as well. Like, these are just not easy skills. And I'm not bringing this up to be like, Pat and I should be paid more. I think it's such an interesting conversation about the direction that Western society is going in, that people who are involved in entertaining and distracting other people, you know, from their, just like, you know, from whatever their immediacy is, you know, the people producing the content to go on the screens, those people are more valuable now than at any other point in human history, for sure.
They're probably actually less valuable to society, but they're more wanted in society. So yeah, the value of the product actually goes up. And listen, if you don't want to complain and say that you need more money, I'll always complain. I always want more money.
Oh yeah, no, I'm a big fan of making more money, and that there's no doubt about that. I had really never kind of thought about it in the sense of what happened with the Deadspin article, which was it's sort of censorship, but on the other hand, like, that guy that Deadspin fired, they're just going to be able to replace him and pay someone else less. And I don't know anything about the guy who got fired or about whoever it is that's going to be to replace him. But there is kind of like this, there's this war in media right now between, like, you know, independent websites. And this is not so much our media. This is more like national media. But there's a big difference between, like, the content farms and, like, you know, good old fashioned independent media. And I don't like the content farms. I think, you know, it's not worth reading. The stuff I would never click on, but there is a real desire for that content. Like, people do click on that stuff.
They do. It's sort of the distinction between, like, who still uses Facebook versus who uses Twitter and Instagram and TikTok. And, like, do you just get all your news from Reddit, kind of thing? Like, the people on Facebook are the direct target market for people of these content firms because they're easy digestible articles. They have a catchy headline and people will share it without reading it. And then other people will click on it. It's like self-marketing. But to go back to your earlier point, when, you know, people feel like anyone can do this, and I agree, anyone can do this. But the biggest value that anyone has right now, especially in, like, the business that we're in, and even any sort of media, is that if you don't have a personality that people respond to, and that people actively want, like, if I leave DraftKings tomorrow and I go do my own thing, I would hope that a lot of people would follow me. They followed me from fantasy over to DraftKings. If I ever went and did something else, I would hope that they would come with me. So, you know, they like my show. They want to hear, you know, whatever shows that I produce. It's not just like, hey, the Pat Mayo Experience is done, let's replace you with X guy. Yeah, I don't know if people would watch that or not. Maybe they would. I don't know. But at least I work under the assumption that, you know, people who follow my show, like the vibe of the show, that kind of thing, that they would end up coming with me. We see with a lot of these content firms, and even especially, this works less well for people in print media because there's only a few outliers to be like, you know, at Deadspin, like, if Drew McGarry left, like, you couldn't really replace him. People come to find his stuff. If you're some anonymous person or even just on a lower tier that you're not so well known by name, people might love your articles, but maybe they don't really know what you look like or sound like. And maybe they won't know. They don't follow you on Twitter, so they don't know where you go next. Those people do become replaceable. And that's shitty, but that's just the reality of it.
Yeah, I think one of the big things that is allowing people to leave some of these big companies is Patreon. And there's a couple other sites that function like Patreon that allow people to subscribe just to your stuff. And some people, I know like some people in like games journalism have been doing that. And also, unfortunately, it's a way for like the mega racists to like who have been deplatformed. They kind of come to some of those positions so that their mega racist followers can just pay for them to stay alive. But I think that there definitely is a future that plays out where the content farm content is all journalism, and then there's going to be this whole separate thing where people are paying for content. I think like the free podcast medium, I don't know if this exists for 10 more years. Like think about like TV, no one just gets free TV, right? But how popular are podcasts compared to like streaming services? Like eventually I think the two might rival each other in popularity.
I think the move might be for Netflix or an Apple TV or an Amazon. Like I've had pitch meetings like years ago with this stuff. I was like, when I was looking where to bring my show after I left Fantasy, I went to Netflix and like we had a conversation about it. I was like, why don't you guys have like daily talk shows on here that are essentially podcasts that you could have the Netflix channel audio wise, you could have it up as new content every day to bring people back every single day to Netflix to just get them on the service and that way that they never leave. And they were like, oh, you know, we do talk shows, but like it's not well advertised. I think that's a market that the streaming services haven't really tapped into yet, that I think that they could be one. They don't necessarily need to be separate entities.
Well, it's also, it's a little bit tough for the cord cutting TV services, for Hulu, for Netflix, whatever, because they are not as immediately accessible as the podcast app, right? Like you still have to go into the thing. What's that?
I mean, you have to open up your podcast app. You just opened up your Netflix app. This would work the best for like if everything's on iTunes anyway. Apple has its own streaming service now. Like, why wouldn't those two just merge?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I mean, even something as like the fact that you have to keep your screen open to keep something playing on some of these apps, like on YouTube, you have to keep your screen open to keep the video playing. On Netflix, it's like it takes one extra step to click play on something after you have closed the screen out. And like, that sounds like, oh, that's very simple, that's very easy. But the fact that podcasts keep playing while you scroll through Twitter, while you scroll through whatever, like I think that is like a legitimate edge with how bad people's attention spans are now.
I would tend to agree. It's one of the main reasons that I end up using podcasts more than basically anything else and like as my consumption, but I'm always on Twitter. Not everyone is always on Twitter or just always on their phone like that, in a way that some people just kind of hunker down and watch something on Netflix and like have another screen on the go, or maybe they just legit watch TV. Don't know really how that works, like how my grandparents actually watch TV. Like they sit there and they watch it, they don't do anything else. So there are still people like that. But you can pay, I think, YouTube Premium, that if you pay for YouTube Premium, it doesn't like
close. Yeah, it's $15 a month. It's crazy.
Listen, I don't pay for it, but I would pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, if there was something on YouTube I really like to watch, because like I'm the same way as you. I'm always on my phone. I'm always doing something. You know, I need to be checking DraftKings or emails or whatever. So like, I'm not ever really going to watch Netflix on my phone. I'm not ever really going to watch something streaming on my phone, maybe unless I'm at the gym. And even then, like I'm still probably clicking off of it. So I bet YouTube prints, I don't know, over $100 million a year on YouTube Premium just because people are lazy.
I'd probably think even more than that. There used to be a app that you could basically just, that would do that. It is when YouTube Premium came in, the app just stopped working, but I had it for like 2 years that you could just run stuff in the background and just go on with your day.
Yeah. But it all kind of centers around podcasts are, because of the way people are attached to the screens of their phones. I think that even now, as podcasts are exploding, everyone has a podcast, everyone has 20 podcasts they listen to, I still actually believe it to be an underexploited medium because so many people do it poorly. So many people give up. You know, so like if you search for whatever topic you are interested in on Apple Podcasts, you are going to find 20 podcasts, but 10 of them haven't produced an episode since 2017. You know, people just stop making episodes of it. So like, I actually believe the podcast space is still underexploited and still has, you know, just miles and miles of room to grow in terms of monetization.
Well, we're seeing that with places like Luminary right now that are premium podcast services. And well, you can still access, like, I don't know, I've never had a meeting with Luminary before, but I went on to Luminary and my podcast is up there. So they still have the RSS feeds from everywhere else and different providers of the host podcast sites. But they also have their own exclusive ones that you can't get anywhere else. Like that's sort of like what you're talking about as a premium service, but I don't know how viable that is. If there's so many free podcasts that I can just get whenever I want, do I really want to pay 10 bucks a month to listen to like three other ones? Maybe the answer is yes, because I do.
Do you pay for any podcasts?
I pay the Luminary subscription to get all theirs.
Okay. I pay for one. I have a subscription to one Patreon podcast, and like I never am pissed that I paid for it. Like every week when the podcast shows up in my feed, I'm like, yep, that was good. I'm getting what I paid for. Like that was a worthwhile expenditure of $5 a month.
Well, if you're going to go, like my wife and I went to the movies the other day, and I think the total that it came to was like after we got food, tickets,
like
food,
bucks.
Parking. Yeah, it was like $100. Yeah. So that was 3 hours worth of entertainment. No, it was great, mind you. It's a very high quality thing, a movie versus a podcast. But if I'm only paying like $6 a month for one, or I'm paying and I get all month and you know, hours and hours and hours worth of content that I'm going to consume versus, you know, 2 hours for $100, like that's not great. It's not great value.
Yeah, no, it's not great value at all. And I think podcasts are where what I think would be the most interesting podcast in an integration feature would be either Apple doing a deal with Patreon or just Apple launching a paid podcast feature inside their podcast app. If that ever happened, if Apple had like just like they have in the App Store, just like they have in the TV store where you pay 99 cents, you get the song, you pay 99 cents, you get the TV show or whatever. If they integrated that feature with podcasts, the monetization, the whole landscape of podcasts would change overnight.
The issue is you need the bigger podcasts to start doing that first, and they make so much money off the advertising that there's no way that they would ever do that. So like if you have the Joe Rogan podcast, which is probably the biggest podcast that's out there in terms of downloads, if that went premium, that would be great. And then you charge like $5 an episode or whatever it might be, whatever they set the price point at. And they can rake off that. But I don't know if that would be more money than they actually make now being free with actual advertising on it. Maybe combine the two together to figure it out. But no one wants to say, hey, Pat, I want to listen to your show. I'm going to pay for it. But every other podcast in the world is free. That doesn't seem sustainable.
Yeah. And I mean, we've already seen. So like, do you listen to Hardcore History?
No.
Okay, so Hardcore History is one of the other extreme, I mean, it's probably one of the 10 most popular podcasts in the world, I would guess.
Is it a podcast reliving the history of the WWF Hardcore title?
It is not. It is like a mega, mega, mega deep, mega well-researched show about, you know, specific instances in world history. They have, they're like, all of them are like 4 hours long, and they're like five-part series into like World War One. I'm trying to think of like all of these different. They had this one that was like 18 hours long about the Roman conquest of the Celtic people, like just like crazy in-depth stuff. And the guy who does the show is really popular. Like he has another podcast that's political that I don't really like as much, but they charge for every other episode of that podcast. So like one episode he puts on the free feed, one episode he puts on the paid feed, and he does really well with the paid feed.
Well, that makes a lot of sense though. Like you tease people with like, if let's say they're always two-parters that you get the first half, that's free. Then you have to pay for the second half to hear how it concludes or hear the rest of it. That actually makes a lot of sense. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, it's really good. And I listen to some other smaller podcasts where, and this is interesting, where they do a very similar thing, but they do every other, but I don't pay for the paid version. So I just listen to the free version. That's once every 2 weeks, as opposed to getting the paid version every week.
I would assume a lot of people do that for your show as well.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, looking at, so like the numbers we have for the Patreon are like, you know, it kind of varies in between 200 and 250 people a month, depending on, you know, just some people renew, some people don't, but you know, obviously the numbers for the free feed are like, it's like they're in whole different universes, and that's okay, because the people that want to subscribe to the Patreon are people that probably, as you were saying, they probably less than liking the show. They probably just like me. They probably just want to support the show and support what's going on.
Yeah, I would think so with that. So that's difficult. Almost just go back to, you know, people are getting paid what I think is a fair wage right now. It's still a bit undervalued, because unless people break out on their own, and that's what we've seen more, that, you know, the liberation of the internet as it pertains to small business and media is that it's taking down a lot of these giant places for two reasons. One, you get cheaper labor when you only pay yourself, but like, I think of like major networks, like whether it be Fox or whether it be ESPN. I can speak to some of the places in Canada, whether it be like TSN or Sportsnet. Like, to produce a sports center type show, like, you need to have, and they're updating this at a more rapid pace now, but a lot of these workers, especially up here, are all unionized. So all your cameramen are unionized, all your lighting people are unionized, all your audio people are unionized, and that is the one job that they do. So they sit behind the audio board. If someone's like, oh man, fuck, that light's out of place, can you just like go move it 3 inches to the left? Nope, can't go do that. That's someone else's job. And that someone else's job gets paid like 90 grand a year or whatever it might be. So the cost of these shows are so off the charts and that until they kind of figure that out, then everything's going to gravitate online. Everything's going to gravitate towards the internet, and people get paid pretty well because you're looking at producing more content, more relatable content. Obviously, it doesn't have the bells and whistles of like a sports center or a major production where each show costs like $500,000. But if you could pay someone $400,000 for a year's worth of content, and it's content that people actually watch, but you only have to pay two people for more content instead of 35 people for less content, people are just going to do that.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right. And you know what I was just thinking of while you were saying that, and I didn't even intend for the show to go this direction, but do you know what kind of the obvious solution is to a lot of these, like, if we wanted to really get down to it, if people wanted to give you, you know, 0.2 cents every time they listen to the show or whatever, the answer to this is cryptocurrency. It's like extremely, extremely small microtransactions that the listener barely notices that they are giving away. But instead of distributing that currency through advertising, which is the way that podcasting works now, it would just be a listener to producer transaction.
So it would be a situation like Office Space, but people actually know that they're doing it.
Yes. Yeah. No, like it is basically exactly like that. Yeah. And there's a web browser out there. It's called Opera, I think it is, that has this token, basically this cryptocurrency called Basic Attention Token, BAT. And basically every time you visit a web page, every time you interact with a YouTube video, every time you listen to a podcast, you're giving away like extremely, extremely small amounts of equity from these tokens you have loaded in your browser to the creator of whatever that content is. And I do actually think, like, and this is the galaxy brain outcome, right? Like, this is probably 50 years away. I mean, you know, 30 years away, but like that is the way for independent creators, independent podcast producers. And eventually this could even filter to like TV production if, you know, because who knows the direction that streaming and all of that stuff will take place. But I do actually think that either cryptocurrency or just like an increasing popularity of like very small microtransactions is a potential solution to this.
Could be. But once again, that would involve everyone getting on the same page. If Apple, and maybe this is something that the giant corporations would want to do, but unless all of the podcast services themselves, and it's probably not.
Well, Apple, Facebook kind of tried, and they're getting dunked on right now.
Well, didn't they try to create their own currency?
Yeah, they tried to create a cryptocurrency called Libra, which would allow basically for exactly what I'm talking about, all to take place on Facebook. Like you give, it would allow for transactions to take place internationally without friction, but also for, you know, just very small amounts to be transacted without a cost. Cause that's why you can't do that right now. That's why this model doesn't exist with US dollars right now, is that transacting in US dollars, especially across international lines, is very expensive because there are so many intermediaries. And basically every country on earth is like, nope, this is illegal. And all the companies involved with Facebook stuff, they're all bailing out. But this was actually someone in the real world, like with, you know, trillions of dollars, actually trying to kind of begin this idea.
I think that the idea, the logic behind it makes a lot of sense because, I mean, I'm someone who deals exclusively in international currency exchange. Like I make all my money in America. I live in Canada. I need to convert all that money over. And it's a hassle. You really have to dig deep and figure out how to get the proper exchange for your money. And like, you almost become some sort of currency trader at some point too. It's like, well, do I leave my money in American dollars and hope that their dollar goes up and our dollar goes down and then I get more money off the money I've made, or do I cash it out now in case it goes down and I'm actually losing money? So that's one way to look at it. So in a worldwide currency does make a lot of sense, especially with more business being done globally now. And that's actually something I did want to talk about coming up. But no one trusts this shit, man. No one does. I don't. Do you? Of course you do. But
I keep at any given time about 10% of my net worth is in Bitcoin. At any given time. And maybe more, maybe less. I mean, depending on what the price of Bitcoin is worth on the given day. It's mega pumping right now. So probably more than 10% of my net worth is in Bitcoin. But if it goes down 50%, it'll be less.
Sure. But when we think about, like, I don't know, if you woke up tomorrow, what would be a more likely scenario? That you checked your bank account and there'd be $0 in it, your US funds bank account, or you checked your cryptocurrency and there was just randomly $0 left in there?
Well, you know, I don't keep my money on the exchange. I keep it in a wallet that no one else has access to. But yes, given those two options, both very low percentage options,
sure.
But also, keeping your value stored in US dollars or in whatever toonies, whatever you guys call it in Canada, there's really nothing dumber than that. Like it's you're losing about 5% of your money every year if you just keep it in dollars.
If you just keep it in like a checking account is what you're saying, or just have cash on hand?
Just cash. If you keep your value stored in whatever country you live in, if you just keep it in your checking account, if you just keep it in cash, you're giving away about 5% of what you make in a year.
Oh, of course. I think that's, I mean, anyone, once you get to a certain level that, you know, you either learn how to invest for yourself or you do what I do and just hire someone to do it for you because you're an idiot. So that's me. I always felt like it's better to hire. It's like, I don't do my own taxes anymore. Just hired someone to do that. They do it better than I do.
Yeah, that's fair. But I would say that people in the United States, first of all, there are just a lot of people who don't have enough money to save in general. But like that's very true. But even people that do have enough money, they just save it.
Mattress?
Like in their checking account.
Yeah, that's dumb.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty dumb. So wait, you said that you had a topic you wanted to get to?
No, I kind of want to talk a little bit more about this because I feel like this is something that you wouldn't like because, you know, you're a wild leftist right. Who enjoys the old socialisms. But the jobs that we work in right now have basically fundamentally worked, and we'll see this play out over the next 10 to 15 years. It's not just our industry, it's just tech in general, that, you know, you don't need Margaret Thatcher to come in and destabilize unions. The internet's doing the work for us.
Yeah, no, and I mean, there are some internet companies like the Vox Media people, they decided to unionize
and watch them go out of business.
Yeah, it's possible. I would be probably interested in joining a union for like online content producers or whatever, but there would be a never-ending wave of scabs to take that union down.
That's the whole thing. When you first get into a business that we all started working for free, and that's still basically how you break into the industry, you do become replaceable in a lot of senses, unless you're one of like the high dollar guys and you have that following and you're like, my business isn't even what I know about golf or what I know about football. My business is me. Like, I don't know any, like, I'm shitty at this stuff, but people still tune in.
Yeah, no, and the same is true for me. I'm decent at fantasy sports, but I'm not Drew Dinkmeyer, you know?
No, exactly. And we even see this now. Like, you look at the most popular stuff. Like, there are some people who are really good who produce high end stuff. Like, even just look at like the fantasy footballers. Like, they're all really, really good, but I wouldn't say that they're Dink when it comes to like, or even Leone, like trying to assess and break down, like running out. Like, if you're paying for picks, you know, you're probably not paying them. But if you want to hear people talk about football, they're the best. They're so entertaining. They're highly knowledgeable. They're fun. And their business model works better than the people who know the most. And I would fall into like the minor league version of that. And so would you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there is no doubt that people would rather be entertained than super informed. Like, I think if you could guarantee people 90% accuracy on your takes.
Oh God.
90% accuracy.
I guarantee like 20%.
But I'm saying you could guarantee people 90%, but you're just boring as piss. You can't, like, it is like watching the walls dry, basically. Or you could guarantee people 45% accuracy, but you are going to just be laughing and rolling around crying laughing for 45 minutes. People would take the 45% and the laughing over the accuracy, no doubt.
Of course. Like, the one fundamental thing that I, and maybe people know their lanes on this. So maybe our lane is one thing, someone else's lane is something different. But podcasting in general, like you keep saying, it's a form of entertainment. It's a form of content. Why do people watch TV? Well, I mean, maybe they watch the news. They want to hear about what's going on. It's not like we're giving people false information. It's the analysis that's bad, Davis, at least for me. But if they feel like, I messaged you the other day that I'm, you know, I really like the Swolecast. I really like the Gilcast. And I feel like they're sort of like cousins of the show that I do with Cust and Jeff. My least informational and worst analysis show of the least of the week, which also happens to be by far my most popular show of the week, because people like coming to hang. Like, that's sort of the thing with it. It's buddies ripping on each other. It builds sort of a community when you listen to it. If people feel like they know you, they can talk to their friends about it. It's not like, oh, I can't tell people about this show because it has all the best information. I don't want anyone knowing about it. No one fears.
Yeah, no one, no one is going, oh man, I can't let people know about Cust. Like, everyone wants to tell their friends about Cust.
Yeah, and then like have the same conversations that Jeff and I have on the show, but they can do it with their friends, just about his horrible lists.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and that is like, it's so true. By far the best feedback of any football show I've ever gotten has been this year's Gilcast, as I just get crushed every single week in NFL DFS. Like, as I somehow miss the cash line by like 3 points every single week. And let me tell you, I wish that I'd figured out a better monetization model for that podcast this year.
Instead of losing money to get views?
Yeah, like that. Like, so right now the trade-off is like, the more I get rolled, the more people listen to the podcast. But it's not really a one-for-one in terms of losing dollars on DraftKings and making those dollars back on the podcast. I'm hoping that I'm really accumulating a lot of future EV, though.
Well, maybe one week you'll just like, you'll bink and it'll pay off the entire season. Then you're doing fine.
That's that's really the hope. We are definitely at a point of the year where I need a bink to get back to even. Like just I would basically have to sweep every week the rest of the year in cash to get back to where I started at.
Yeah, but maybe you'll come third in like the Millionaire Maker or something like that, and that'll be good enough.
Pat, that would be that's the dream.
Well, it's the whole thing. Like, outside of 1 week playing DraftKings golf, I'm an overall losing player for life. But because I had one good week, I'm going to be a winning player for like the next 20 years based on what I play.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good situation to be. That's a situation to be into in general. Yeah, I agree with you. Like, I will probably be a lifetime winner because of results I had before people were good at DFS. So like I was really dedicated to like grinding games in like 2013, 2014 when people were really bad. And now that people are better, games are just a lot tougher.
Yeah, I don't even play cash games on draft.
Well, even GPPs, people are just better. Ownership is way more efficient now.
Yeah, people are better, aren't they?
Yeah, people are better. People know to stack. You know, yeah, you're not ever going to find people who are, you know, playing people who are inactive, who are injured. You're the only position where ownership doesn't really get crazy on the best plays is at quarterback, but like all the best plays, like, you know, Michael Thomas is just going to be 35% every week, even in tournaments. Like, you know, it's DFS is a tough game these days.
Yeah. That's why everyone migrated to the content business.
I mean, you're not wrong. It's part of the reason why I was really excited to play in like high stakes fantasy football leagues this year, because people are actually bad at that still. Like people are still bad at that. Like there's definitely a chance that I am able to pay for my whole football season based on some of how good some of my high stakes fantasy football teams are.
Is that something like you need to make moves with every week, or is that like a best ball type thing?
Well, both. So I have like teams in the best ball championship and stuff on the draft app, but also I am in a like five like high stakes leagues, so like entry fees over $1,000 where you have to make moves every week.
That seems like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. I mean, I like it though. Like there are some aspects of grinding fantasy sports that I still like.
Yeah, that is not one.
That's not you. Yeah.
Like I forget to make, I'm only playing like five season long leagues now. That's up from last year. And I just legit forget to make my waiver moves every week. And I write a waiver wire column.
I kind of look forward to grinding them all out on Wednesday nights a little bit.
Mine usually pass on Tuesday nights, but like I'm so far into the next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I do my waiver stuff on Sunday night. I do the show on Monday morning. And then I'm just like, well, all right, moving on to next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just forget. And I used to be the guy in our league. One of the main reasons I got into fantasy in the first place is that I was the guy who was hyperactive on everything I could play. I was doing nothing. I was just sitting around smoking weed the entire day. I had time to go on and make sure my fantasy teams, like I was running a fantasy hockey team, a baseball team, a basketball team, and like multiple all at the same time. And I was super sharp about it. It's funny. The more you work in the business of
fantasy, the less sharp you can be at fantasy.
Yeah. It's funny.
Yeah, you just don't have time. You just don't have time to make every optimal waiver move in 50 leagues.
Well, if I was going to if I allocate my time now to where I want to be most optimal, it's, you know, betting number one, DraftKings number two, then my, you know, $100 buy-in home league that I play with my friends.
Yeah, I my order is probably this. Well, no, betting is second for me. Like I bet more player props though than like against the spread or whatever. I'm actually having a very good year betting against the spread though.
I was having an awesome props year. I was like 30, or I wasn't 30. I was like 21 props above 500, and I got wiped out in week 8.
Well, what can you do?
I have a
Bitcoin deposit bonus that I'm trying to clear, so that's why I've been betting mad props.
So if you go onto a site and deposit in Bitcoin, will they pay you out in Bitcoin?
Yeah, that's why I do it.
Now, see, there's a situation, because if you're using Bitcoin on a gambling website, that sounds like a pretty sketchy gambling website to begin with. Probably the only way that you can play on that site is through Bitcoin, so the government can't track it and know where you are.
All of these U.S.-facing sites, because I don't live in a state with legalized gambling yet.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's their out to get around legalized gambling.
Well, it's like I could deposit in cash. I could get money out in cash. It's just a little bit more risky.
Well, this gets to my point of why I think that people don't trust cryptocurrencies, because there's no regulation for it. And people say, oh, deregulation is the only way to go. It's like, well, then you have people who can circumvent the system. That's not great. Like,
yeah, that's
true. Put it this way, when terrorists take hostages and they get payment now, they get paid in Bitcoin because it can't be tracked.
They probably get paid in like Zcash or XRP.
Sure, but it was for like, you know,
a long time. Like it was Bitcoin.
5 years ago, 6 years ago, if you like, you were going to do international transactions and like dark web and dirty money, that was all going to be through cryptocurrency. Now I think you actually, can you track crypto? Can you track Bitcoin now? I think you might
criminals who use Bitcoin now are like stupid criminals.
Yeah. So they've evolved Bitcoin, into something else. But for ages, that's what you used.
Bitcoin can be pretty easily traced by someone who knows what they're doing because every transaction is recorded on the blockchain. So like it's really as simple as finding like a computer programmer who, and if you have one of the wallet IDs used, it can be traced. So like, you know, do you know about Five Dimes Tony?
Is he the guy who got killed in Costa Rica?
Yes. So okay, basically,
then yes.
Yeah. So basically the people who kidnapped him, the way that they started to arrest those people was because they used Bitcoin as like their ransom money instead of something else. And Bitcoin is very easily traceable these days.
I had a question for you.
Hit me.
It's a thought that I had. So if you were to put like outrage culture or environmentalism or stuff like this, stuff that's popular on the internet right now, which side of the political spectrum would you attribute that to?
Outrage culture is the right. And
I would say outrage culture is across the board.
Yeah. And environmentalism is the left, of course.
It is. Now, if I told you that the invisible hand of the market was doing something, who would most like to hear that type of thing?
The right.
Yeah. But I think that all this stuff is the invisible hand of the market. It gets the market correcting itself. Like you can pretend like, oh, this stuff's on the internet. This stuff doesn't matter. But we just had the Canadian election up here and like climate change was the biggest issue that swung the election.
Yeah. You touted on this show a winning bet.
I wish I could do this on my own show, but I gave it out on my show. Yeah. It was never in doubt.
Never in doubt. I a couple of people messaged me and said that they actually bet it.
And this is, I touted Trudeau before he got caught doing blackface. He did blackface and still won.
Pretty impressive.
Well, he benefited from outrage culture going too far. Like it was the perfect thing. Like it was the perfect person to happen to for it not to affect him. Cause he's such a leftist that who's going to get mad? The super alt-right people? No, they love blackface.
I mean, you're not wrong. Yeah.
It was a weird situation to get into. Just the guy that he was running against was the biggest loser in the world. Like we have so many parties up here, like the conservatives won the most votes in terms of like popular vote, although we don't talk about things like popular vote in Canada because we have like six parties. Like it doesn't really matter as it kind of shook out in this election, but they ran, if they had just run a cardboard cutout of a better looking person, they would have won, but they didn't.
Well, what can you do? I think the point you're making is one that a lot of people don't even like to think about in their daily life, which is just that the mega uber elite rich people make all of the decisions, and everything that we see is a lot of market manipulation just so that rich people can get more money. And at the end of the day, a lot of our choices and a lot of the options that we are presented with on a daily basis are just what the super, super rich people allow us to have.
No, that's not the point that I was making. My point
was actually that's not the point you're making. That's the point that I would come to with all of this stuff.
Yeah, like all of this stuff is just, here's how the winds are blowing. Like, when people talk about like conservatism, it's not like they want to go back to 1940. They want to keep the status quo. But what conservatism tends to forget is that it's still supposed to be a progression. They just don't like the giant leaps forward. I mean, you can take that from Mao all you want, but just even with the way that society works is that, you know, it's supposed to progressively get done. And that's kind of how it worked for a very long time, is that society would incrementally move forward. But now in the tech age, that stuff happens so quickly, is that society is moving that way too. My overall point on the hand of the market and environmentalism becoming such a big priority to people is that that's how this gets solved. Like, people want to talk about like, oh, the government doesn't do enough to stop climate change. Well, the government's not supposed to stop climate change. The government is fucking useless at everything. Why do you think that they're going to solve climate change? The answer is going to come from business, when business can figure out how to profit off of climate change being something that we want to tackle. And enough people are being consumers of that now worldwide. It hasn't quite hit America yet. Like as an overall scope, but like after seeing the results and the exit polling from this election, it was a meaningful thing to most people in Canada. And I would say that's probably pretty apt for a lot of Western European countries. So you need to get into the States, you needed to get into China, you needed to get into India, where you can start making money off this stuff. And that's how the problem gets solved.
I don't know if in the United States, if we're even close to that point of environmentalism being profitable though.
Well, it's going to take someone to figure it out. Like someone like Elon Musk is the type of person, not him in particular, but someone like him is going to be the one to figure this out.
Yeah, probably not Elon Musk, but definitely
it won't be him, but it's someone of that ilk.
Yeah, I mean, once you figure out how to sell saving the earth to people, then because you're totally right. The government is not going to solve global warming because corporations are just always going to find their way around whatever it is. You know, carbon taxing was the big thing for a long time, and then companies just figured out they could still just be printing money, basically. So it is never going to come from corporations until it becomes profitable for them to start saving the earth.
I actually think that, I don't know if we ever actually get to a solution, but if we can mitigate some of the damage and try to reverse climate change or even figure out a solution, fossil fuels, just independently of this, that their profits will inherently just keep going down. They'll still make a ton of money, but when they look at the graph, the numbers will be going down. They don't like to see the numbers going down, and they'll figure out the way to get the numbers going back up is to adjust their energy solutions in a different way, and hopefully that ends up being better for the planet.
Yeah, hopefully. But well,
put it this way, it can't be worse. We went from coal to gas. That was step one. You go from gas and oil to something else. That's step two.
Do you think, I mean, that's got to be people not wanting to drive. I mean, the other issue that you have with people like not burning fossil fuels is there are 80% of the country that burns all these fossil fuels is not going to be able to afford cars that don't run on fossil fuel.
Well, that's where the solution has to come in. There has to be a price point. I mean, if you're making a product that no one can afford, no one's going to buy it, and you're not going to make any money. I mean, there's a reason that like cheap shitty cars exist, and you'll just have the cheap shitty version of electric cars.
Well, cheap shitty cars are used cars. So like think about how long it's going to take for used electric or solar powered or whatever cars to become the norm. Like we're talking like 25, like if it started today, every car that was produced no longer a fossil fuel car, for predominantly non-fossil fuel cars to be the used car market, it would take 15 years.
It might take 15 years, but if you got all of the oil, like gas and diesel powered cars off the market now, then inevitably everyone would have to have an electric car in 15 years. Like this is not something that's ever going to happen. Like, oh, tomorrow, no more gas. Like you need to have some sort of plan to wean people off. I kind of look at, there used to be this program in Canada, hitting from behind in hockey, real, real big issue in Canada.
Yeah. Huge issue.
It was paralyzing kids. We saw it in the NHL, and like people would be like, oh, they put these like stop signs on the back of jerseys, just being like, if you see the sign, don't hit the person because they are standing, their back is to you. You should never hit anyone in the back to begin with, as a general rule of thumb. It's very cowardly, but it's obviously hasn't solved all the problems. And people were like, this happened like 20 years ago, and people were like outraged, like, oh, well, I see in the NHL all the time, like people are getting hurt, getting hit from behind. But now like 20 years later, hitting from behind is completely, it's not completely out of the game, but it's way down because all the people who grew up with these rules in place are now in the NHL and they know not to do it. It's like this stuff takes time and people don't want to wait the time for it to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. Also, you know, waiting as it pertains to climate change does feel horrible though.
No, but it doesn't though, because I do feel like
the time to start acting on this stuff was 10 years ago.
It was probably like 40 years ago, but you can't go back in time and do that. And I think that It depends, I guess, on the science that you believe. Like, you'll see, I think everyone agrees that climate change is a thing, but you'll see people out there be like, oh, in 5 years, the world is going to be underwater. Like, I don't think that's true, but people say that, and then people get all riled up, and that creates one of two sides. You polarize people to, well, we have to do something right now, and if you're not doing something right now, you're like a terrible person. Then you have the other people like, well, we're fucked anyway. Why do anything? Like, it's not helping.
Yeah, no, I guess it's not helping. Well, I think it's actually better to be like, this is horrible, this is bad, we need to start doing stuff right now, as opposed to, because if the messaging is, okay, let's fix this, let's change this slowly, like, that messaging does not get to people who make decisions. You put way more pressure on the people who are rich and the people who are in charge by making the messaging, this is serious, this is happening right now.
I would say that most people agree, especially in like some of these higher up positions, agree that this is serious. But I think that actively voicing everything, it would be like, okay, you get the ball back with three timeouts and 1:05 left on the clock in a football game. But you have all three timeouts, but you treat it like you only have 5 seconds left and you just throw two Hail Marys from your own 20-yard line. Like, there needs to be, like, there's reasonable, like, oh, we need to score six points or we lose the game. That's not where I think that we are. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But if we do have time to figure this out, a slow burn and integrating certain things progressively into society to get people on board would be a better move. And just basically not talking about it outside of the corporate level and let the corporations trickle this down. And then people become accustomed to it in their real lives without even knowing that they're getting climate change. Do you know what I mean? Am I articulating that properly?
I think you're articulating it properly, but I don't think just letting corporations make decisions is good. I think that's bad.
I don't think that they independently need to do this, but there are levies and taxes that you can put on them or just give them incentive. Like, I think this is what it was. I mean, it's funny, for as into like following politics that I am, I actually don't know any of the policies of any of the people like accurately because I don't really care. I just like it as a sport and like polling and betting on it, that kind of thing. But I do believe that there is a thing between provinces in terms of the environment in Canada, where if you're a carbon emitter and you go over your carbon cap, you then owe money towards the environmental sector. Like an independent, like, I think ours is government run, which I think is a terrible idea. It should be an independent body that actually researches this stuff. But if you can get one to fund the other, then the people who actually have to fund it don't want to lose that money. They start figuring out the solutions on their own. But if you can just pass the product onto the consumer without telling them what it is, it's like, put it this way, it's like telling your 5-year-old child, like, oh, you're eating broccoli tonight. And they're like, ah, fuck, I hate broccoli. Broccoli's, they probably wouldn't say fuck. But you know what I mean? Like, they don't want to eat broccoli. Broccoli's gross. It's a vegetable. But if you just don't tell them it's broccoli, they'll eat it and they're fine with it. You need to kind of do that to consumers. And then, like,
100%.
You pull the curtain away 10 years from now and be like, hey, look, we're now running a more sustainable and climate effective economy and social life. And listen, you didn't care. If I had told you this was climate change, you'd have a problem with it. Or at least this is a way that we can mitigate climate change. You'd be all up in arms because you hate that. That's awful. But now that you've just done it for 10 years, look, you like it. It's fine.
This is actually, so I've been wanting to talk about this on the podcast for so long. So I'm so glad we got to a point to talking about corporations and food, because I need people to know I'm not one of these like carnivore, you got to eat meat people or whatever.
Well, but you sound like you have low T, sir.
Yeah. So this vegan crap that you are getting peddled is so bad for your body and so bad for you. Like, people should really not be eating this stuff with like 112 ingredients, and most of it is like various forms of canola oil or whatever. It is this like Beyond Meat, these vegan dairy things that you are being peddled. This is industrial sludge. This is like chicken feed. You are getting fed dressed up chicken feed.
The whole thing about any sort of diet, whether it be a carnivore diet, whether it be a vegan diet or somewhere in between, the single thing that you should be doing if you actually want to live a healthy lifestyle is just eat fresh products. And you don't want to eat processed meat.
The fewest ingredients possible and drink water. That is my current diet.
And that is probably the best way to go about it. But you're right. Like, there's no difference between eating this Beyond Meat stuff and like going to your local supermarket and getting some frozen chicken nuggets and making it. Like, it's all the same crap.
It's leftover products that someone at a corporation figured out that they could sell you. Okay, so a lot of people in the Bitcoin space are like, they're actually extremely annoying, and I hate a lot of people that are really into Bitcoin. But one of the things that they are right about is like, a lot of them are, you know, quote unquote carnivores. And so their big thing is like talking about how bad veganism is and everything. And I don't actually think that's true. I think being a vegan, being a vegetarian is fine. If you're eating healthy food, you're eating whole foods or whatever. But someone posted a tweet of comparing the ingredients for one of these fake burgers and then a bag of chicken feed, and like the overlapping ingredients was like 90%. And I was like, I'm never eating one of those things again. I ate the have you ever had one of the Impossible burgers yet?
No.
Well, I had one, and they do taste pretty good, but it is legitimately, it's just canola oil. It's flavored canola oil.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people conflate veganism with like
with health. Yeah.
And that's not the case.
a big problem that a lot of people who are vegan and vegetarian have is they just end up eating a shit ton of pasta, which is not a mega healthy food.
No. And then they go to all these different places. Like, you'll see, like, especially where I'm at, there's a lot of like vegan only stores because there's enough people around. There's enough vegans around. That's like a sustainable business that you can have. But they'll go and be like, oh, I'm eating healthy. I just had 12 vegan cookies. It's like, well, there's a reason you're still fat, man. Like,
right.
Figure this out. Figure out where the correlation is here. Like, if you were just going to like, you know, the organic food market and getting some vegetables or getting some lentil beans, like, that would be a good diet. That you could get your protein that way. You get your veggies that way. Everything on like your food spectrum would be taken care of. But most people don't eat that. They basically eat fast food veganism.
Yeah, and that, like, that's a great point. That is not good for you. That is not healthy. Like, you just should not be, like, and I don't know, you're right. Somehow the idea of veganism and health food did get conflated, and those things are just not true. Like, animal products by their nature are not bad for you.
No, it's everything in moderation. Like, I probably eat meat with almost every meal that I have.
Yeah, I probably eat meat, probably not with breakfast, but every lunch and dinner. I'm sure I eat meat.
Yeah, I'm trying to think the last time I had breakfast without meat, some sort of meat in it. I eat a lot of like turkey bacon.
Yeah, you love turkey bacon.
That's where I went with my diet, where I didn't want to give up the stuff I actually liked, and I love bacon, but like, I don't mind turkey bacon. I find it's not as good as real bacon, but
I think it's pretty good.
But that's the thing. It is pretty good. Like, we've now gotten to the point, and this is kind of the thing, like, back to what I was talking about with cars and passing this stuff along. Corporations or whoever it is that make these products know that there is a market for people who want to be healthier. And it's not to say that like turkey bacon is healthy for you, but it's so significantly less worse than actual bacon. But now it actually tastes good 10 years later.
Yeah. No, it does. So I, you know, the most unhealthy thing that I eat that people think of as healthy? Breakfast cereal. Breakfast cereal is stone cold bad for you.
Depends on what cereal you eat.
I mean, like, if you have putting sugar is bad.
But if you just have a bowl of like Honey Nut Cheerios or Special K, like, that's not bad for you. If you're eating Cap'n Crunch, then yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And I don't eat Cap'n Crunch, but I eat like
Lucky Charms,
like frosted wheat.
Yeah, and basically, you put frosted in front of anything, whether it be cereals or tips, then yeah, you're not doing well.
Yeah, no, it's not. So I should probably stop eating that. That is a vegetarian breakfast.
Eat whatever you want. I don't really care, but it's almost like no one wants to have anyone come preach at you about what you should be eating and what you shouldn't be eating. But I don't want to hear about how healthy your lifestyle is. And you're like, you know what I have for breakfast? Frosted Flakes. Like,
Frosted Flakes. Pretty good, though.
It's like the people who see me smoking and are like, you shouldn't smoke. It's like, yeah, no shit. I didn't know.
Yeah, obviously, I shouldn't smoke.
I was unaware. I thought they were healthy.
You still smoke?
Yeah, I started smoking again.
NFL season?
It's stressful, man.
Yeah. I think this is the first NFL season I'm going to go through without smoking in like a decade.
Congratulations.
Well, we got a lot of time left.
Yeah, this is true. And it only gets progressively more stressful.
Right. Yeah. You just get less and less sleep and less people are watching your show and engaging with your stuff because their fantasy teams are worse.
Yeah.
Tough scenes.
It's a bummer. I did want to talk about like almost on the same thing where you can kind of trick people into being better people at some point. I've seen a lot of this. I watched that Chappelle special. And then I saw this pop up on like my Twitter feed, whatever it was, like the shooter preparation classes that you have in America seem like the most insane thing in the world to me.
Well, yeah, it's probably not going to save any lives. It probably is going to traumatize the kid. But do you know what's more insane, Pat?
What?
People are just walking around with assault rifles in the United States and that being totally legal.
It's funny because we have these talks like, yeah, I try to present myself off as, like I said, I don't really have any sort of political views per se. Well, you do. You're very passionate about some of this stuff. But like that one just seems so, in being from a different country, it just seems so nuts.
It seems insane, right? Like the United States is the only country in the world with this problem. And everyone in charge can't agree that it's even a problem.
It's just really bizarre. Like, why do you need a gun?
Well, the argument is that I guess someone might break into your house.
No, isn't the Second Amendment to protect yourself like from a tyrannical government? But don't they have like nuclear weapons?
Yeah. So this is the whole thing.
What's your assault rifle going
to
do?
The same people arguing for the Second Amendment are the same people that want to vote to fund, you know, $9 trillion a year to the military to give them crazy, crazy stuff that a private citizenry would never have.
Funding the military is actually good for the economy.
Well, funding the military is good for the American economy because that's the way it's built. It's built to have all of these industries funnel into the military. Like you're saying, though, incrementally, we could get away from that and we should get away from that.
Yeah, I guess so. It just seems so crazy. And then that this is the logical step that people are taking that. Oh yeah, we're going to teach people how to not get shot out of school. Like that sounds like the fundamental problem right there. At least to me.
I mean that sounds like a skit, like a show that someone would make about the United States of America to like laugh at us.
And it's not even like shooting, like mass shootings, that kind of thing. It happens in other countries. It happens here. Like we had one of these incel people, they rent a car and go drive over people like just over a year ago in Toronto. It was like a home.
Right. But that was like, what you've probably had like in your time living in Toronto, that's happened what, 5 times maybe?
Oh no, once.
Yeah. So that happens in the United States like once a week.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
Like you gotta be like legit afraid to like go places.
No, but even if you like run the odds, like you shouldn't be, because if you run the odds on it, then it's still incredibly low. Like it's infinitesimal. Like if any of this stuff would actually ever happen to you. Now, I know it seems that way because it happens a lot, but just if you took, I don't want to try to like trivialize or minimize this, but like if you're living in fear, that seems kind of insane. Isn't that the whole point? Do not live in fear. Like after the terrorist attack on 9/11, we will not live in fear. Like we heard that over and over, but now mass shooters have people living in fear.
Well, no, but the it's not the mass shooters winning. It's the thoughts and prayers people winning, I guess, because they get to keep their. It's still anyone who wants a gun in the United States really can get one.
Yeah, maybe enough. Do people like? I don't know what like the actual like polling on this is. Like, do people actually want that, or is it like a vocal minority?
A majority of people support like stricter restrictions for who can buy a gun, but the issue is there are just so many guns out there already that the best solution is a buyback program, and that would be one of the most unpopular things that the United States government has ever done. I think even some lefties would vote against that.
Well, then you're in a situation where I think I heard Pete Buttigieg talking about this at the last debate. I like him, by the way. He's
he's the worst.
There's my next political wager. I already have it in. I have him 7-1 to win the Democratic nomination and 16-1 to win the presidency. Yeah. He has the second best chance overall of beating Trump behind Biden. And I think when Biden ends up cratering and losing his support, it all goes to handsome Pete.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I don't really like him, but
he is the distinct non-crazy left winger in the race.
I think
he's a centrist. But his idea was like, listen, like, it's not going to work saying you don't have guns anymore. And it's almost the same thing with climate change and all this stuff. Like, it's not going to be like, oh, we flipped a switch. There's no more guns anymore. You have to figure out a realistic way to get rid of them. And it's going to be little incremental things and maybe making tighter restrictions of people across the border on board with that, background checks. You get that passed. And then the next person can come and do something. But to think that you need to get it all done at once just means you're never going to get it done. It's very much like trying to write the really good essay 3 hours before the class starts. And like, oh, I just started. Here we go. Like, it's not going to be good.
It's pretty possible. I definitely got some bees doing things 3 hours before they were due.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that speaks more to the to college rather than it actually being good.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would give American politicians on both sides a straight up F- for how they have dealt with guns over the last 10 years. Not one politician has done a good job. They've all sucked.
But you can say whatever you want. Actually getting this stuff through and passing a bill to do all this when there's like blockers in the way, it's all like Steph Curry can shoot from 37 feet. Andre Drummond's not making that shot, and it feels like the government is Andre Drummond in the situation. Just go dunk it, Andre. Just the high percentage shot, something little. It doesn't need to be three; it can be two.
Well, it would really just take like three Republican senators or Congress people to be not, you know, total like stooges, and I don't know if we'll ever get there.
Oh, I most definitely think we'll. Does Yang have a chance of winning?
No.
I don't think so either. I kind of wish I like him more involved. He's good for these debates. He actually
I like Yang too. I mean, I like Warren the most, but Yang would probably be my second choice.
Warren, there's someone who can't beat Trump.
Oh yeah, she can't beat Trump, but that's who I will vote for.
Oh, well, that sounds like a great idea. You want so voting for Warren is essentially voting for Trump, is what you're saying.
Well, I live in the state where I vote for primaries. Biden is just a stone block.
Unless the biggest correlation in polling for Biden is Buttigieg. So do you like Biden or Buttigieg better?
Ugh. I guess Buttigieg, but I don't. Like, both to me seem bad.
Like, I would think that, like, if Yang somehow won, I actually think he would beat Trump because I think he speaks to that, like, disenfranchised voter bloc really, really well with this, freedom dividend. I just don't think he has enough support to win.
The Democratic establishment, I think, would not vote for him in a general election.
I think they would. They don't want Trump. That should be good enough, but it won't be. Like, if you're going to sit there and say, maybe what people actually want, Davis, is Trump to remain president so they can remain pissed off on the internet and just pissed off in general. Because that seems to be what people want. If you're going to say, and your entire day is based around, I hate Trump, Trump's a racist, all this stuff, and that's like now your identity, what happens when Trump goes away?
There definitely would be a cottage industry that sprouted up about just like laughing at like Trump being I just imagine Trump post-presidency. Like it would be a very funny situation.
I feel like he'd be on TV immediately, although he's a very old man, so.
He just, like, it's hard for him to speak in complete sentences, so I don't know how good he would be on TV.
I mean, he's on TV every day now and doesn't speak in complete sentences, and he's the biggest ratings draw there is.
It is. It's just so wild to me, man. It's really wild to me that he is the president and that people are, like, satisfied with the outcomes of his presidency. Like it seems like just alien and foreign to me.
Well, I mean, he did what was a pretty savvy thing is like he associated himself with a lot of these like niche and like, I don't want to say fringe groups, but like,
oh, stone cold fringe groups though.
Not really. Like Christian conservatism is not a fringe group. That's a very large segment of the American population.
Is it though? I don't even know if it is anymore.
I would say that's probably what, like, well, I mean, religious, like people being religious in general in America versus like the rest of the Western world is like triple for one thing.
Yeah.
So let's say it's 25% of the population that would call themselves, or even 20% that would refer to themselves as a Christian conservative. If the one thing that they wanted was to get that guy Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, then Trump did what you wanted to. He's going to get your vote again.
Yeah, I guess that it, I guess
not,
that was,
it's not what you want or most people want, but he appeased that block of people. They're going to continue voting for him. So there's going to be another block of people. Maybe it's like 6% of the population, but he'll get that vote too. And then you just start piling it up. It all adds up over time because, like you said, well, if Pete Buttigieg is the candidate or Yang is the candidate, the Democrats won't even vote. Well, that's not smart.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, the two people that can beat Trump are Biden and Bernie.
Bernie's a real wild card. I think anyone who has like socialism as their platform, I just don't think he's going to win. Then you scare
off.
Let me tell you this,
though.
Scare off all of the moderates that would be like me who don't want socialism.
He's got. I bet he polls at like 90% with people my age.
That's fine. Davis.
He's got big brand recognition. His brand, like Bernie's brand, is strong.
Yeah, well, I mean, Democrats in general, you want to say they don't like Yang, they don't like Bernie either. But like Buttigieg,
I think people over the age of 50 just shouldn't be allowed to vote.
Well, that seems like a very fascist thing of you to say.
Yeah, it does. I just, it's so like, just thinking of like boomers, just like making all these decisions is so tilting. And I wish that, I guess one of my big things is voter turnout was very good for the midterms in 2018. So that is very encouraging to me.
Well, what you should do right now, once you turn everyone under the age of 35, if you don't think the people over 50 should vote, you guys should have a vote. 35 and under, everyone should vote that when you turn 50, you give up your right to vote. See how that goes.
I'm actually fine with, the thing I would most want is mandatory voting, but that is, which they have in some democratic countries.
Yeah, Australia has that. I don't know if you want that, Davis. I think your views might lose out if mandatory voting comes in.
But there are more young people than there are old people, though. That is a statistical truism.
Sure, but not all young. I mean, a plurality of the younger people would swing very super left. But eventually, there's still more of the other age groups than that.
Pat, what I'm trying to say is I want only people who agree to me, who agree with my political views to vote, and people who don't agree with me, I hope that they just all spend their election day at Denny's.
Yeah, see?
That's what I'm saying.
The first time I came on the show, I made the argument that fascism is more of a left-wing ideal than a right-wing ideal. It is the violence that gets associated with fascism that ends up being
I disagree with you.
But the people who exist in today's, the cancel culture is basically fascism. You can't talk. You don't get to speak anymore. We will tell you, we will litigate who gets to speak, what they can say, and what they don't get to say. And that's just a very left-wing thing these days.
I think it's
I know better than you, Davis. I will tell you what. Yeah, it's obviously an extreme poll thing on either side.
It's just the left and the right both would gravitate that way. Like in the extreme sides.
No, the right tends to be more. I mean, if you went to like the far right, they just want.
It depends on which right you're talking about, though, because you have the alt-right Bitcoin. Alt-right, and then you have the white supremacy alt-right, and those are two different, the one part of the alt-right would be like the genetic cleansing sort of ones, and then the other one would be like the I just want a dystopian world where everyone has guns and fights for every resource that exists in the world, and I think those are two different types of alt-rightism.
Sure. The alt-right that I'm talking about. So the ideas, the fascist ideas that exist and like what we associate, we're not even really associating with fascism. We're associating with Nazism on the very right wing. And there is a distinct difference between like the government structure and the, like, we think about Nazism when we think of fascism, because that's like the main one that we've ever come across. And it's so filled with hate. And like you said, genetic cleansing, that kind of thing. But the actual structure of a fascist society is we tell you what to do. Here's what you think. If you don't think what we think, you need to go. And I see that on both sides, both on the extreme sides of it, but the left side is more publicly vocal about it because they claim to have the moral superiority in all of this. Mm-hmm. Like, put it this way, if you're an alt-righter, you're like, only white people should live. But not only just white people that have these distinct traits. Everyone else can go. Like, people will look at that and be like, good God, that's, everyone can agree, that's really ridiculous. But when you get people standing up for stuff that makes sense, like, a lot of the, like, the moral outrage over things, when it's justified, that's one thing. It's now trickled down because it works. So if someone does something horrendous and people call them out, that's one thing. But people who are even more radicalized and extreme, especially on the left, see very minor things that deserve to be called out, but people don't need like their careers to be ended over. Then that gets galvanized. But you actually see that stuff go through society. You see that stuff online. People actually talk about that stuff. People laugh off until like they both laugh off the claims of like the crazy right wing people, but they also don't, they take them seriously as like a threat to society, but no one takes them seriously in their claims. People take the super left wing more seriously than the super right wing when it comes to stuff because they don't want to be the next person canceled for something like somewhat trivial.
No, the super left is more. The super left is just less about like diminishing people for just like their genetic makeup, though.
I get that. I don't think that those things necessarily have to correspond with one another. Yeah, you're right. I don't think that like the, it's basically the opposite of racism on the other side, but it's like you can only now act and talk and do exactly how we say, or we have a problem with it. And that's just as scary.
It's not just as scary to me, but I see why someone who is more in the middle of those things would think that way.
Well, what happens if that side and those people end up rising to power? What happens?
A lot of bad people get canceled.
But that's step one. Step two is just even more authoritarian power. You have to act this way. And no one wants that. That's just a lack of freedom. It's a lack of freedom on both sides, a lack of choice. And there should be choice.
There should be choice. I don't think that many people who align with me politically would say that our political ideals lead to less choice, because my politics is less about the gender stuff though I think all of that is really important, and people who spend a lot of time being like, oh, are you triggered, lib? Like, I think those people are insanely stupid, but my politics are more about income inequality than anything else. And I think maybe some people on the liberal platform have moved on from that and they are more into the gender politics. That is not as much of a driving force for me personally.
And I think that's a very smart thing. I think that is going to end up being the issue. Like, that's why when I talk about like liking Yang, I kind of like him as like a dude who's up there talking and stuff. And I like the idea of universal basic income. If it takes away from a lot of different government programs, this gets money directly to people. And it just gives you a safety net in a way. Like, no one's going to retire getting their, or not work because they get $1,000 a month, but it does create more opportunity for people to take chances in terms of small business. And when you have small businesses that can rise up, you replace the giant corporations, you create more jobs, and that actually does create income equality. At least in my mind, it does.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that seems relatively accurate, but I also really like the idea of universal basic income. Or this is how we're going to end this. I want this to be the last thing we talk about. Corporate profits are just unpaid wages. And that someone said that to me once, probably about a year ago, and it is stuck with me ever since. And that I would say, more than anything else, that sentence right there reflects my worldview.
Do you know who also says stuff like this? My unemployed brother-in-law, who just posts memes on Facebook all day. Well, and he's unemployed because he lacks skills. He just doesn't want to work.
I enjoy working. I like my job. I like doing podcasts. I like doing fantasy football content. I'm not ever asking for a world where I don't work. I am asking for a world where income is distributed more evenly and more fairly.
Sure. And I don't think that's unreasonable, but it also can't work the other way too, where you own something. Like if you're the CEO of a company, the shareholders own the company, the shareholders pay you to run that company so they can make a profit. That job is very valuable. Like ownership is still a giant thing. Like if I own something, I want to be the one who reaps the reward. There's a reason that I own it.
Yeah. But does the reward need to be 900 million X no. your investment would 500 million X be good enough?
500 million X would be good enough. And it's funny, like personally, I agree with you. Maybe that there should be a cap, but then I start thinking, well, if we put a cap on that, what happens after that? Can you pick and choose? If you could, that would be something I would choose to be lower, a cap on that. But if you start stunting what corporations can make or what individuals can make by being successful at the business that they have, you don't have to do that.
All you have to do is innovation. Just tax them a little bit. You just got to tax them a little bit more.
That is a really, yes, you are correct. However, if we get into that territory where taxes just become, I don't know, if they're a little bit less.
What if Amazon paid 10% taxes instead of 0%? Like, wouldn't that make the world a little different?
It would make the world a little bit different because Americans would lose a lot of jobs because Amazon wouldn't be located in America anymore.
But what if we get into like one world government sort of crap. Yeah. But I mean,
but that's the reason that Amazon can skate by paying less in tax. Think about how many jobs that they create, the service they provide to Americans. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be taxed, but if you do start taxing them, you're going to see Amazon in Mexico pretty quickly.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess that is, so like that is definitely the answer to why corporations are not forced to pay taxes in the United States. But it's a tough scene though.
It is a really tough scene. It sucks, but people, I don't think, understand the reality of that. Let's tax them all 30%. Well, now 500,000 people just got laid off.
Yeah. Yeah. It sucks. So there we go. That was a long podcast.
Yeah. I got to go do a show now.
Yeah, I hope people enjoyed it. That was a long show with no agenda.
I like when we can kind of argue about this stuff, and now we can still remain friends.
It's crazy.
I know.
It's true. It's different because you don't live in the United States. I would definitely be more tilted at you if you had these views and you were an American voter.
But I feel like I possess more of American views and you possess more Canadian views. We're on the political spectrum in our wrong countries.
Yeah, yeah, no, that is certainly true.
I don't really have an agenda either way. It's just I try to see where the winds are blowing a little bit and what people want and just try to come up with a very logical reason why stuff like this happens. There seems to be very little logic in politics. That's, right. Again, why I kind of like Yang. Like, that's sort of what he's talking about.
Yeah. All right. Well, folks, that is going to do it for us on this episode of the TakeCast. So, Pat, thank you very much for joining us, bud.
Thanks for having me.